Thinking of starting a podcast? Well, try Anchor. It's free, easy to use, and its creation tools allow you to record and edit directly from your phone or computer. It'll even take care of distribution for you with a single tap so you can be heard on platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. Also, Anchor is the only place you can publish video podcasts directly to Spotify. Man, you can even make money using Anchor in a couple of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. It's truly everything you need in one place to make a podcast. So make sure to go download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Again, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today. Welcome to another edition of the It's Cavalier Podcast. As always, it's your boy Mac. Joining me today is my co-host, Corey Walsh of Fear the Sword, and Spencer Davies, a man who had the pleasure of being in attendance for the virtual Caris LeVert introduction. With that being said, man, Corey, so much has happened in the last 48 hours. It has been ridiculous. And I'm not going to lie to both of you guys. When these deals are dropping, it's always at like the most inopportune time for me because I'm away from my phone, I'm doing something, and I'll catch it like 5 minutes after and Twitter is like blowing up. So I guess my question for you first, Spencer, is what was rolling through your head when you found out that we didn't have to sacrifice any significant assets to acquire Caris LeVert?
Yeah, that's the biggest part of it, I think, is you didn't have to give up any active players. It sucks to see Ricky Rubio go. I know that team loved him. And I was kind of the attitude that they should have probably, you know, kept him around and tried to re-sign him in the offseason. Now, it's possible if Indiana does end up flipping him, like the rumors are saying, for Rubio to return in the offseason, if that's the way he wants to go. But just the fact that, you know, they went out and got somebody that can fill it up, can make plays in the pick and roll, and really kind of play this hybrid role that Sexton and Rubio together kind of made, I think is what's interesting about this deal. And not to mention too, that this is a guy that's, you know, basically entering his prime, you know, 26, 27 years old, kind of fits right into the timeline, and being a home state guy, you know, being from Columbus and going to Pickerington. Yeah. It just seems like a pretty solid fit. And we all know that Caris is a great guy and he's, his character is, you know, high as it can be. And that's what, you know, JB Bickerstaff was saying. I mean, the team itself, you know, Jared Allen, Ed Davis, those kind of guys gave him complete vote of confidence. So, should be a good fit from that perspective.
Corey, conversely, what were your thoughts on that? I know we talked a little bit about this in the aftermath and the Cav space and whatnot, but what are your thoughts? Just being able to sleep on it a little bit more.
You know, I feel like for the past few weeks, we've been very hesitant about making moves on this podcast because we just want to let the good times roll without sacrificing any big pieces. But the more I've really let it soak in, I feel very comfortable with the decision at this point because we didn't give up a lot. We basically gave up, at most, in my opinion, the chance to not have Ricky Rubio back, which is, like Spencer said, pretty big for this franchise because Rubio was such an impactful presence both on and off the court, and his ability to help these young players develop throughout the season has just been so drastic and something that this team really hasn't seen at all from the past few years of this rebuild. But now that I'm sitting here, now my question has gone from where do I think Caris LeVert should go is like, do I think he should start or do I think he should be a very impactful player off the bench? And similarly to how we saw Sexton in the beginning of the season where he, JB was using him in a kind of the way he was always used, but he just didn't have the starting role attached to him. And I could see them probably doing that the same with, Caris LeVert.
Yeah. I saw you poll Twitter earlier asking, you know, whether or not, where people would prefer that JB utilize him, whether that be in that starting spot or as more of a sixth man. I got to say, to me, you know, I've echoed many, many times now that starting to me is becoming more and more nominal. I think it really depends upon the player and egos. And there's a lot of different, you know, factors that go into that type of decision. But, you know, for me, if I had to make my conclusion at this point in time, depending upon where you should start, I would say go ahead and hand him the starting role because I don't really
And I think Justin and Carter talked about this recently on their latest episode. I don't think you're going to lose too much of what Isaac gives you, and you're not. You certainly can still play him a solid complement of minutes. But Spencer, I'm very interested, and feel free to decline this question if you feel you must. But if this was your decision at this point in time, where would you utilize him at, or how so? Because we know, just as Corey pointed out in that same poll, that he's most likely going to be, you know, closing games. But what would your decision be in the process of that?
So, you know, I kind of thought about this once the deal got made. I'm more towards the probably make him like a super sub type of guy. Just because you were just mentioning about how similar, you know, he is to Sexton as far as the way that, you know, he drives hard, gets to the rim, pull up jumpers. That's just all part of his skill set. I also think he was kind of forced into that with Indiana a little bit this past year. But I would start this way by bringing him off the bench first, and just getting him acclimated, maybe giving him his own unit to run a little bit, take the pressure off of Kevin. And more so too, because I don't think that you want to mess with this starting five's chemistry right now. That's the other part that kind of has me a little hesitant.
Yeah.
We haven't seen LeVert off the ball too much here as of late. But that's something that he told us that he's really looking forward to doing with Darius. He said he likes to play off of playmakers. You know, JB even agreed with me about catching drives where LeVert could really, you know, excel in those situations as well. So I think they're going to play around a little bit. But if it were up to me, I probably would bring him off the bench to start it off. But if he does start, I could see it working the way the rotation did earlier in the year with Sexton, when Sexton would get subbed out like 4 minutes into the game, 5 minutes into the game, and then you see him staggered a little bit. That's at least my opinion, but who knows?
Go ahead, Corey.
That's exactly how I've been thinking about this, is because the whole reason we're bringing in LeVert is to release pressure off of Garland. And you're not really releasing all the pressure off of Garland if they're both on the floor at the same time. Like, we can give Garland a lot more of a rest in minutes, like in games during this point of the season, if we have LeVert in, and he can he'll be like the first guard that we really have had since Sexton that has like its own gravitational pull to it from a scoring perspective. Like, yes, Rubio had gravitational pull, but yeah, he was shooting inefficient shots at the end of the day. And LeVert is kind of known for doing that now. But if he can kind of operate more freely and not feeling like he has to carry an Indiana offense that was kind of becoming more stagnant as the injuries started to mount, then I think we could also just see a kind of a different, more efficient version of Caris LeVert. Because I know a lot of people are jumping on his raw shooting stats right now and saying that he's an inefficient player. But if he's surrounded by a lot of talent, he doesn't have to take half those shots he probably felt like he was forced to.
Exactly. And there's a domino effect too. I think that, you know, Kevin Love gets a little bit of a breather here because he's the one that's putting this this bench on his back. And same with Jetty Osman. We know how good Jetty can be in a lower usage role, but he's somebody that's taking a ton of shots. Actually, before that barrage of threes that he hit against Indiana in the fourth quarter, which, holy hell. But before that, since January 4th or something like that, he was shooting 27% from deep. Now, maybe that he's not going to have to put it on the floor as much and all that stuff out of necessity, just like you're saying, Mac. I think that helps them as well. So all around, it's relieving some pressure off of some guys. And I think that that's the reason this is such a good you know, move to make. And again, you're not disrupting anything. And that, I think, was the biggest priority. For myself, as somebody covering this team, I think that you don't want to mess with a good thing. You don't want to pull the wrong Jenga piece and have that thing crash. So I think they did a good job of that.
Yeah. It's definitely going to require some fine tuning, especially heading into it. I heard you ask him a question earlier, just in reference to, you know, how he would feel about playing more of an off-ball role in the minutes that he does share with DG, and what, you know, if that would excite him and what his comfort level would be like in that regard. You know, I think his response is something of the like of, you know, he's played off ball most of his career. So with both of them being able to run the pick and roll pretty well, I feel like this has potential to be something really great and develop into something really great. And as I said before, I believe starting is becoming more and more nominal. So whatever they decide to do there, I'll roll with. And I have confidence and full faith that JB will figure it out. You know, with it's just another weapon as a, at his disposal when we have been kind of short on those, especially with all these injuries rolling in. Now, my biggest question for you at the moment is Lowry. How does Lowry play into all of this in regards to, you know, minutes? Because the rotations are going to kind of have to go through sort of a reshuffling here. You're going to try – if you look at this both ways, if you're going to start Caris over Isaac, one would assume you're still going to try and get Isaac the same complement of minutes that he's getting right now. But you may look to put him at the three at certain times, and you're going to – that means you're going to have to adjust whatever Lowry's situation is when he returns. So in that regard, are you feeling like Caris's addition is going to take away from anybody's minutes?
I think that it might decrease some guys slightly, but what this does is it's just kind of an embarrassment of riches now. It's like a situation where whatever matchup you have, you can kind of roll with it. I don't think that you want to try and reinvent the wheel here. I don't think that you go away from tall ball. That's what got you to this point. I don't think you mess with any I still think that you keep the same starting lineup. And then when, you know, Lowry returns, you have Dean Wade play his, you know, 15 or so minutes off the bench. You know, you still have to find time for Lamar. Like that's the part that I'm not envious of what JB has to do here, because there's a lot of talent and a lot of guys are showing that they deserve minutes. So that is where the rotation might be deeper now. Like it might go past that 8 to 9, maybe you go to 10, because obviously it's the regular season and that changes when it comes to the postseason. But I think it's matchup dependent. I'm wondering if we see Caris and Okoro on the floor at the same time, in any of these lineups. But again, it's all dependent on who you're playing. But I don't think you go away from what's helped you get to this point. And that's the uniqueness of having 3 7-footers in that starting lineup. And, you know, just having that defensive versatility that has them like at one of the tops in the league of doing that.
Yeah, certainly. I think that his acquisition has changed things in that regard, but to a larger extent, you know, it adds another weapon. And like I said before, it just gives JB the ability to kind of throw another weapon out there for defenses to have to account for.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of how this team can use so many more weapons and be more flexible with its rotation, I immediately go back to that Golden State game with Clay Day, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
Because that team, we could, like, when we tried to match the Warriors' pace with our tall ball lineup, you really saw at times the flaws in us just trying to kind of force it, because it's the only really successful option that's been working for us all year. It's the identity of the team. And if we had someone like Caris LeVert in, it would allow us to play a little bit smaller. But at the same time, it would also, because Lowry was really the victim of that Golden State game. Like the Golden State was like ready to just attack him at all times. And if we had Caris in that spot at certain times, I think that game would have been a lot closer, because having 3 7-footers basically run suicide sprints up and down the court for like 4 straight quarters was really, it was wearing on them towards the end of the game.
It's tough. You have to make those adjustments. And it's funny that you bring that up, because JB was talking about basically if you know, DG and Caris are on the floor together, that they're going to have to chase him. They're going to have to chase him because he is also a threat to run an offense, to run a pick and roll. Rajon Rondo mentioned a couple of days ago that Caris hasn't played with a lob threat in a few years. And now he's back with his old friend that he used to play with the Nets, with Jared Allen. He also has Evan Mobley there, can do pick and pops. You could do throw it over the top. You got Kevin Love waiting over there. You got, as you say, Ed Davis was on the Brooklyn team, but you got Kevin Love also now waiting on the wings for threes and dumping it into the post. So he's just got so much to work with here. And like you were saying, Cor, like he was kind of forced in Indiana to kind of play, I don't want to say outside of himself, because he is a bucket getter and he can pound it into the ground a little too much sometimes, but he is also somebody that's just, he's a killer. He's a killer type. And that's what the Cavs have really been missing since Colin Sexton was out. So that I think is a nice band-aid here through the season. And then we'll see and pick it up where it goes there in the off season. I still think that they're going to try and, you know, get Sexton back, but we'll see where that goes. So. But, I mean, again, you can't you can't argue against depth.
No.
And certainly, you can never have enough scorers. So
no, especially with the recent injuries as of late, this, and I'm still surprised the Cavs have managed to kind of break even here with what they've had to work with, especially with DG being out recently. I mean, just along those same lines, man, I'm Corey, you know, man, we've been talking for weeks and weeks at a time about how we did not want to sacrifice Sexton in said deal. And I was kind of on the fence about Karis at first. And, you know, I'd have been completely transparent about that. And that is completely tied to the cost. And now that we do have him and we didn't have to get rid of Sexton to get him, I'm ecstatic that we have that option available. And just like you, Spencer, I'm hoping that they're able to convince Colin, because at worst, I do believe he'll sign the qualifying offer to return on at least the 1 year deal. But I'm hoping that they're able to work out some long term extension with him. I really don't know about Rubio at this point in time, the future. I think that trade kind of it does definitely hurt your chances in selling him on returning. But maybe these are internal conversations that they've had. You never truly know. But man, just outside of the Cavaliers, the sheer madness that's gone on in regards to some of these trades. I mean, CJ McCollum is now a New Orleans Pelican. That I did not expect that. I did not expect that at all. And there was other players in that deal, and we'll get to that in a moment. Tyrese Haliburton and Buddy Hield are now Pacers. So some of the craziness today, just, and Domantas Sabonis, he's a king now. I don't know how he feels about that, but I'm sure the Pacers feel pretty good about three turns. Now, that brings me to my next question. In that McCollum deal, Larry Nance Jr. was brought over. Do you think there's a potential buyout aspect for him? That's my first question for you, Spencer.
I don't necessarily think so. If anything were to happen there, and again, this is just like me thinking off the top of my head, like then maybe they would flip him if they were looking that way. But I feel like David Griffin's just in buy mode, regardless of what their record is right now. They're still in the play-in tournament hunt. You know, Herb Jones is playing his butt off. Brandon Ingram just won Player of the Week. Jonas Valanciunas is putting in work right now. So they're a feisty bunch. They're like 21-20 since they started out 1-13. So they've been playing better. So does it, you know, resonate with a win now move like this? I don't know. You're probably looking more towards 22-23 than you are this season. But by default, you might make the play-in tournament, and you know, you get CJ McCollum, who's, you know, getting a fresh start here. You know, he can fill it up, take off a little bit of pressure of you know, Brandon Ingram there. Larry Nance, we know when he's healthy how impactful he can be on both ends of the floor as just that Swiss Army knife type. So, you know, you kind of like that for Larry, especially because, you know, he was over in Portland, and it, that situation just turned miserable for pretty much everybody in an instant. Man. So
I'm wondering what's going on.
I feel like it's not a bad situation. Mind.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he had some say so in this, or they at least probably came to him in regards to these deals that they're going to be making, because their roster has been completely overhauled, completely uplifted, and they got compensation in regards to that. But they look like they're set for a complete and utter rebuild there.
Yeah, hopefully in his case, it's a retool instead. I mean, at least they didn't give up Anthony Simons. You know, that's somebody that they had to keep. You know, apparently, according to reports, that they're still looking at Jeremy Grant, and they got a giant trade exception in the deal. So maybe that's something they try to do, but yeah, that's an interesting situation.
Yeah, I would not want to be a Portland fan at this point in time. That's we've been there. We know how that feels. But conversely, the Kings Pacers deal, old buddy Tristan Thompson. Is there a potential for him to be bought out? Do you think? I know this is kind of just speculation at this point, but would you entertain that if you were the Cavs, if he was available on the buyout market?
So I think there is definitely potential for him to be bought out. Just thinking of you know, they have Rashawn Holmes, they've got Metsu, they've got Len, they've got some bigs there that they, you know, still have to figure out the whole playing time situation with that. They even got Nimi Keita, who's one of my favorite players at Utah State last year. So yeah, I could see Tristan getting bought out. As far as the Cavs goes, I couldn't tell you. I honestly don't know. I'm sure I know one party would welcome it. You know, I know that DG and Kevin would love to see Tristan back in the fold. But, you know, they do have Ed Davis as that veteran guy right now. And he's played the most underrated role on this Cavs team, I think, of just teaching guys like, you know, Evan Mobley and Jared Allen the tricks of the trade, being ready at a moment's notice to step in and grab some rebounds, you know, get some, you know, post buckets, whatever it has to be. He knows what his role is. And I think that they've been extremely satisfied with what Ed's brought to the table. So, but if Ed were to go somewhere else, then, I mean, yeah, I could see that. I just don't see them carrying, I don't know, what would be 5 or 6 centers.
Yeah.
Think, well, bigs, I should say. Bigs. Evan Mobley's not a center. So,
do you think the Cavs are going to remain, you know, kind of vigilant in regards to into making one more deal before the deadline?
They do have a near $3.5 million disabled player exception that they for got Colin. For Colin Sexton. So that's a potential thing to keep an eye on. They're definitely, you know, sniffing around. I mean, they're going to do their due diligence. I think if this was it, I think they're thrilled with where they're at and how they've gotten to this point, you know, bringing in Rajon Rondo about a month ago, and now landing Caris LeVert by losing, you know, one player, albeit very important, like I mentioned earlier with Rubio, but they lost one player who wasn't active. And, you know, there's no need for the draft picks at this point. You have a ton of 20 somethings on your roster, early 20 somethings at that. Yeah. And you're not going to, you know, draft another guy that you're probably going to have to pay again and find rotation time for. So I think it's the right time to cash in on those picks and assets. I also thought that Indiana did pretty solid in the deal personally, but
yeah, I mean, they get that expiring there. That was probably a big selling point. Those picks too.
The expiring a first rounder that's lottery protected. And then you look at the Houston pick. The Houston pick's basically going to act like a late first round pick anyway. But yeah, I think that they'll sniff around and they'll try to probably find a vet of some sort who's on a small contract. But if they don't get that done, they don't get that done. We'll see.
Does this raise their ceiling, Corey? Because we both kind of gave our opinions on that. But does the Caris LeVert deal raise the Cavs ceiling in regards to the postseason?
Oh, for sure. I mean, anytime you can add a consistent scorer onto your team, it's a huge win. And this team needs any amount of ammo it can get when it goes, if it wins its first round and then ends up going against one of the top of the East.
That's what I was going to ask you. Does it make you more confident heading into a potential series with the best in the East in regards to Milwaukee and Brooklyn in a 7-game series and even the Bulls?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps a lot because of this offense was predicated upon Darius Garland and the pick and roll offense that the Cavs have been thriving on. We've seen at times that Darius has not handled being overwhelmed that well by the defenders, especially I think of that first Milwaukee game. Drew Holiday was like draped all over him. And there was at times where Darius definitely was looking for some outlet to get out of being trapped. And there were times that the Cavs just really, they didn't have the firepower to match up. So having another primary or a ball handler that can also score at the same level as Darius is just astronomical. And he's like, honestly, way taller. So it's a huge benefit too.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Spencer? Does it raise their ceiling?
Oh, I think absolutely. You address that, you address the depth. You know, if Bull could come back miraculously by playoff time, you also think about just that potential. You're getting awesome. Deeper and you have backup plans, you know, plan B's and plan C's. And then like Cor was saying, just having a threat on the floor with Darius offensively is huge. Someone other than somebody you're going to throw a lob up to or get into the paint. I know Evan Mobley's been doing good. He's been putting it on the floor a little bit more now, you know, doing the floaters and the pull-up game. I get it. But having another, you know, a wing that can do that, something that the Cavs have been searching for years. Yeah. I know he's a little on the shorter side for a three, but you could play him realistically at the three, or you can consider him a swing man, you know, like, so I think having somebody with a multi-tool skill set next to Darius in those situations could be really nice. And again, as a super sub, when Garland's getting a breather, more than capable of running his own unit.
Yeah, we've seen at times too with this Cavaliers team that they're never that scared off of the idea of running a smaller three, because there are times throughout this year and last year running Okoro at the three. And Okoro by most
6'4", 6'5"
by most people is a very short three. So I don't think JB would really be scared off by the idea of throwing Caris LeVert in at 6'6", even though hashtag height watch, he looks taller than 6'6", according
to most people. They did that with Darius.
The Darius thing is real, though. I can tell you that, just being in the building, the Darius thing was real. And he actually laughed at it. What's he listed at, like 6'3"?
Yeah, I believe 6'2" or 6'3", yeah.
I think he grew about an inch or two.
He may have.
When he was at the Olympics.
Yeah, just good time. So, man, I got to ask both of you guys. So, Corey, I'll go with you first, man. If you had to build an ideal 9-man rotation, and we know that come postseason rotations seem to shorten. This Cavs team is all of a sudden becoming more and more deep, even with the injuries. But if you had to build a 9-man rotation, what would it be?
I would probably stay with the healthy version of the starting five we were seeing before. So DG, Okoro, then the big three of Lowry, Mobley, and Allen. And then I'll give co-six mans to Kevin Love and Karis because, you know, Kevin Love should win sixth man of the year. So
no, me. Yep. You know it. Just wait till tomorrow.
Six. So that's the 6 and 7. I think Lamar should get a tap in for that too. For doing 9, Dean Wade. You know, we're the premier.
We are the premier Dean Wade podcast. You can't leave Dean Wade out.
and then Rondo, obviously. So that would probably cap out my 9-man rotation. I mean, if Rondo's struggling, you can just easily swap him and Goodwin around. So I think that 9 spot is very situational. And now with LeVert, I don't see a window in which someone's going to be like, you know what, we should throw Dylan in there, see what Windler's got going on, because that shooting is now completely covered. And that was like the thing that I felt like was keeping Windler in the rotation period.
And see, they're so deep, you already forgot a pretty main piece to this team, and that's Jetty.
He's oh, so my God.
How easy it is now, because they've made these moves. They've added to their core. They've added to this roster. Wow. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. And, yes, I agree with you that there's some way, somehow, JB will find minutes for Lamar Stevens, because he's the heart and soul of the team, in my opinion. But, it's tough. It's tough. It really is.
I'm gonna ask you the same question, Spencer. You got to give me a 9-man rotation.
Don't leave out Jetty.
And then what happens if Bull comes back? Am I assuming Bull's healthy by the playoffs?
Oh my gosh.
I would welcome it. I do think it's unlikely. If he's not close to 100%, I say just don't do it, man. Don't put yourself in a bad spot, in a bad situation, because he has the most to lose from that.
Oh, absolutely.
But if he returns, that just muddies things up even further, and you're going to have to take somebody else out of the road. Lamar probably ain't getting time. I don't know. You could really go any way with this, but I will ask you to give me a 9-man lineup or a 9-man rotation.
Same starting five as core. You don't break up one of the top defensive units in this league just because you got some new toys to play with, you know. Karis, Kevin.
When you get to honestly,
Jetty's got to see time. He's especially the way that he's catch shooting this year.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, this is hard.
Do you think they will go 10 deep come the playoffs because of how
it's hard to do that in the playoffs, though? I think you got guys competing, and you know, you feel so bad for Brandon Goodwin because he's really played his heart out.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
he's played his damn heart out, you know. But we know the whole playoff Rondo persona.
It's real.
So Rondo's got to be in there. And then I probably got to go with Lamar. I think Dean Wade would be the odd man out, honestly. I'm sorry, but that sucks, because even when Dean Wade's been in the starting lineup, he's basically done the same exact stuff defensively as Lowry.
Very good. Yeah. Very underrated.
Yes. Love his game. This is a good team, guys. This is, it's the reality of the situation now.
Good problems to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I had to go back on my Jetty mistake, I would probably say it had to be Dean that would get the boot, because I think Lamar's too much, too valuable defensively. Like, this team does, if you had to argue it's weak in one area, it's just having twos and threes that can really guard defenders. And I know Lamar is basically a four that we're forcing to play the three at times.
And
but
twos.
Play the two. I was going to say, play the two earlier this year.
Yeah, I think JB will just value that more, because now that, like I said earlier, LeVert coming in adds so much more shooting, and that Dean is a very decent 3-point shooter. So having LeVert now, it's kind of like the need for shooting is a little less than it was before.
Okay, I'll roll with that. That's totally fair. This is a tough decision. This is something that I do not envy JB come postseason time, especially depending upon the matchup. But I do want to talk about, before we get out of here, man, Brandon Goodwin as a starter, 6.3 points, 5 rebounds, 6.3 assists. Terrible shooting percentages as a starter, 27.3% from the field, but he is shooting 38.5% from 3-point range. Now, we know that, you know, he's likely not going to be able to suit up in the postseason. But with the wealth of the guards that this Cavs team could potentially end up with next season, do you consider bringing him back? Is he a player that you would want to resign if you're able to keep Colin? That's another thing. Like, you have Karis next year. You got DG. You got Okoro. You got a ton of guys that you're gonna need to give minutes to. Is Brandon Goodwin going to end up being the odd man out eventually?
You hope not, because, you know, he just brings just amazing vibes, and it's literally been since the first day he stepped in when he was on the hardship first. He went out and earned that two-way contract. He was closing games by his third game, I think it was. Mm-hmm. which was incredible, honestly. He's a go-getter. That's what I like about Goodwin.
Got a little Sexton in him. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, that's actually something I was going to bring up too, because, you know, they're both from the Atlanta area. They're pit bulls down there, man. They like to go and attack and attack and attack. No fear. But I mean, you kind of have to consider him the odd man out if they're going to continue to put these pieces together like this. And particularly too, I mean, you know, LeVert's extension of eligible. You have Colin, who's going into the offseason as a restricted free agent, and that's going to command a lot of money, or he's going to be back on a one-year prove-it deal, whatever it is.
Yeah. Do you consider bringing back Rondo?
I doubt it. I would doubt that one. Just from an age perspective, just from, I don't think he's got, you know, more than a couple years left in him personally. He's obviously an amazing basketball mind. He's already talked to us about how much he can't wait to be a coach. So that's, I don't know, maybe if that's a hint, I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if he was out of the picture after this season and stuff like that. But focused on now. Focused on now. And they've got a good thing going. I was going to say, living in the moment. That's my thing, man. That's what's this trade deadlines, man. I can't stand them, because the transactions become the product. And I'm like, guys, enjoy the basketball. Watch the Phoenix Suns, man. They're 43-10. Yeah. That's an amazing team to watch. Why are we talking about extra moves? Like, watch the basketball. Like,
so at least fun. This isn't the 2017-2018 Cavs that just cleaned house. Come this point in time,
fountains not drains. But hey, you know what, that's when Kobe Altman started up all of this asset acquisition, and that's why they're at the point they are today. A lot of people, you know, were bashing the heck out of him for the Kyrie Irving trade, and then, you know, you have all these things that if you do some giant web, you can see how they got to this point. And I think that's why Kobe is winning the moment right now. I'm very happy for him. He's a great
dude.
Has he
ever really missed? Has he ever truly missed on anything he's done so far?
What are you going to maybe consider Andre Drummond a loss? But it really wasn't a loss, because it was basically a trial run.
Yeah,
right?
Vincent Knight and what was a second rounder in that deal.
Yeah. I mean, what did you really, you know, and that's pretty much what, you know, the detractors will look upon that, and they'll look at the Kyrie Irving deal. But if you look at that again in a web, and you look at the other deals in a web, it got them
looks
to this
a hell
point.
Of a lot better
and,
now. Yeah.
And you look at his draft history. I mean, aside from maybe Dylan Windler, I think he's picked some damn good players, especially for where those players were picked at. And No, big ups to him, man. I mean, he's having his moment, and he certainly deserves it.
Indeed. With that being said, we're going to bring today's episode to a close. Like I always tell you guys, if you'd like to reach out to us, you can at @itscavalier_pod on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. Thank you to Spencer Davies for joining the show, and have a good one.